you know. And then sometimes you get lucky enough and you get a good size. And we used to eat that too. But whatever you got, you ate. And if, I remember we were going on the way to get wood one rainy day. The cold, wet rain, I think it rained for a solid 2 weeks. And we're in this camp, no fire. You got one blanket and a straw mat to lay on. There's no such thing as a pillow. You got a block of wood they used to give you to lay on. You could only cover yourself up, you know, roll it up. Cold, miserable. So they said, they take 40 of us and go into this bush like and pick up these branches, like that's what the civilians used to do. So we used to pick up these branches and bring them. But on the way, this is why the sentries, they didn't mind us. They thought it was a big joke if we pick all this stuff to eat, you know. Mm-hmm. But we used to push the rocks, and you would find these snakes on the damp rocks. See, and they're actually were probably hiding under there. We take the rocks and we kill them. We didn't know whether they were poisonous or not, because once you got a hold of them, all you did is just cut the necks off, and or if you didn't, you just took a rock and just smashed it over the end of it. Got and take the skin off and you rip it all the way down. The guts come out, and you put it as, and then we would save this and then get to home. And when we built this fire, we used to, everybody used to, whatever they picked up, they would roast it and to eat it.
Somebody even ate rats, I guess.
Well, some like I said, nobody told you nothing, because everybody didn't want the other person to know that what they got. I imagine it's like being in prison, right? I don't know. I've never been in one, so I can't tell you. But I do know what it's like being there.
Do you remember how you found out that the war was over? Did the Japanese tell you?
No. We woke up this morning, one morning, and we didn't find anybody. The gates were wide open. Only one Jap, that the most hated one, he was the only one that was there. And I think there was five of the boys, I think they killed him. They beat him up so bad, because he was the most miserable in that camp. He was a sergeant in that camp. And I don't know, he was one of those stubborn, he must have been awfully stubborn, because anyways, he was the last one to leave. And it seems like these boys got up in the morning, and they seen it, that they were more or less backing up. Because when I got up, all I know is, all I could see is barrels coming from parachutes. Mm-hmm. They were dropping the barrels, because on the last day, I think it was one or two boys got killed, because it went right through the Waco and killed him on the barrel.
Were you on the coast?
No, I wasn't.
Did you see any bombing or any American planes before the war ended?
Way before, when I was in Hong Kong, we had two planes. All we had was two planes, and they shot them the first day. Mm-hmm. Look at those old antiques.
Yeah.
Now, they threw these incinerator bombs. Uh-huh. And they melted just like you would. Well, you've seen the smelting, I believe. This is the way it is. Once it hit the ground, everything burned, regardless of it.
This was the Americans?
No, this was the Japs when they were getting it.
Yeah.
But we seen, at the end, we seen the Americans bombing.
Mm-hmm.
See, we could see from our camp. And right away, we start, this is where we start of putting, I don't know where a lot of fellas got, but they got white paint somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they were putting on top of the roof, POW.
To let them know you were there?
Yeah. And we could see, the mountains were on one side. We could see the American planes coming over these mountains and bombing. And this is how we knew that the war must have been coming pretty close to the end, because we'd seen them. And as it got, then they started to get worse. See, while they were doing this, we would need to sometime for 2 or 3 days. They wouldn't issue nothing. He said, we will win this war, no matter how it happens. We will win, we will win. And they got even to their army to believe this. But gradually, they were losing these islands all the time. I also forgot to tell you that when they lost an island, we wouldn't eat that day. If they lost an island, they'd say, well, so-and-so was, hey, nobody eats. So we went hungry that day. And then the camp commandant would come along, and then gradually the fellows were getting sicker and sicker, and finally half the camp was there. But now the other half going to work wasn't paying off. So they got Japanese doctors after that. So the Japanese doctor, he said, look, he said, I'm a doctor. He said, don't class me on Japanese, but they said, don't class me with the army, because he says, I would save no matter who it is. Whether he says, I'm a doctor, and this, our profession, he says, no matter where you go, what country you go, or anywhere else, we're out to save people's lives, and this is why I'm here. And it was true that he did. Then the medicine started to come in. It was the last year we were there, about the last eight months before we were liberated. And they started bringing the medicine, these Japanese doctors. There was two of them, and they brought this medicine in, what they had. The only thing is we're sorry, because we haven't got enough medicine for our own people. So he says, I'm only allowed to give you so much, and this is it. He said, because he says, our Japanese government does not want to be. He says, your lives are not worth as much as a man's life. So anyways, some of the boys committed suicide. I guess you talked to Bill Mell.
Bill? I haven't. Somebody else probably has. I haven't talked.
Well, he lost his body. He cut both his wrists. He won't tell. He probably won't tell you that anyways.
A lot of them just gave up too, didn't they? And as soon as they gave up, they just sort of.
Well, it's you give up the will to live, and in the first place, I can't blame some of these fellas. You take a lot of these country boys, they were well fed out in the country. The people in the city here, they were on relief. So what did I used to eat one meal a day while I was here. So gradually, I got used to hardships when I was here, it was hardships there too. But I could survive much better than a man that weighed 200 pounds.
Yeah, and it was used to eating.
Eating heavy, see? Mm-hmm. Well, right, where to me it didn't make much difference. And gradually I weighed 91 pounds when I come to Vancouver. And they fed me up with more pills. I used to take about 70 pills a day. And they used to give you pills like, for instance, they give you two pills would be equivalent to 4 pounds of liver. Mm-hmm. Or they give you injections. Like my behind was so sore from getting those needles thrown at you and then pull it out that I couldn't sit on it. But by the time I got home, I weighed 170 pounds. I came here and I was supposed to go to the TB clinic. And you probably, if you look at me, you won't be able to tell me my age anyways.
No, I couldn't tell.
You have no idea. Well, I'm 60.
Really? Well, you fared better than a lot of the men.
Well, for one thing is, after I come home and they told me I had TB, and they told me to go to the clinic, and I said, well, look, I said, I got a wife, and I think she can look after me just as good, and I'll come into the clinic every so often. So I used to come over to the Deer Lodge every week, and every week they would give me treatment. But at home, I used to have all my windows open at home. They told me to keep lots of fresh air. Don't drink, don't smoke. Well, I done that for a year and a half. Never touched any liquor, didn't smoke, didn't exert myself, even with my wife, I never exerted myself. So I finally got from a quarter to a small nickel. Well, and this was done in about 11 months. When they seen that I was doing that good, they said, maybe you better do exactly what you're doing. And then, within 2 years, it sealed. Now, the spot was there, but it was filled over the top. And now, when I go there, I get an x-ray every year, and they tell me that as far as TB, I could just about forget about it. All I have to do is keep looking after myself. And this is what I do. I don't stay out. I don't booze. I do like you. And I'll come in and I'll come home and I'll have 2 bottles of beer, maybe 3 bottles of beer. That's it. Or I'll go with my brother-in-law sometime, and sometime I'll have 8 bottles of beer. But I don't drink hard liquor. You come downstairs in my place, you'll find all kinds of hard liquor. I don't drink it. I only use it for people that come here, but I don't drink it.
Did you have any sort of side effects from the food they dropped from the planes? Like a lot of the men, I think, got sick.
There was a lot of men that overate themselves. Now, you know, they dropped biscuits, chocolates. Now, most fellas, I think, hurt himself lots with chocolate.
It was too rich?
Yeah, it's too rich altogether for them. Same thing with butter. They were butter and biscuits with the, well, at least what they call the wafers and that we get. All that rich stuff they ate. And milk. Instead of drinking it, they ate it with a spoonful. It was all powdered milk. They ate it with a spoonful. But I don't think the milk did them quite so much harm as fruit and that sweet, sweet fruit. And they used to just gobble it down. And I got so, that my stomach got so small that I would eat, I think, 20 times a day. But I would only take so much, you know. I'd have a chocolate, see, and they brought this chocolate about that thick, you know. So I used to break off a piece of chocolate, put it in my mouth, and just suck it on it, you know. And then that'll do me. And then I found out that my stomach couldn't take it. I could only eat so much and couldn't take it. Well, a lot of these fellas, most of them, did themselves more harm by eating too much at the start than they did when they, because see, when we went through all the hospitals, they only give us so much food, little at the time. They give you more medicine, more pills than they would give you food. And this, I guess the pills was do you more good because they were enlarging your system, see. Instead of that, a lot of these fellas almost kill themselves.
Just by overeating?
By overeating. A lot of these fellas went totally blind. Yeah, I'll get you another bottle of beer. I got
no, that's okay.
Yeah?
That's fine. Do you remember how they got you from your camp down to the coast? Did you take a train, or were you on the coast?
No, we from the cap, they loaded us up on the train. Then they took us through the city, and then we got the ones that couldn't walk, like they with me out. I couldn't walk, and quite a few fellas couldn't walk. They laid us on a B-29, and they flew us because we were, some of us were the first ones, and then some of them were put on a boat, and they were isolated. See, first of all, I remember they giving us X-rays on the boat. American boat they had. I forgot the name of the thing because it's a beautiful boat. They give us kimonos. I can remember so well that I wanted to take these kimonos home with me. They had nice green, red, yellow, all velvet, you know. Mm-hmm. And oh, they were lovely. Yeah. And it had the name of the boat right in the back there. And I wanted to take them. But I couldn't even get out of the bed. So they took us off the boat, and they said, well, you got TB. Amy Paul's got TB. He's got TB. So he says, you people, I'm going to get it flown. So they flew us. And this is how I come to my first hospital, was Saipan. This is where I got. And then while they were there, because I remember they were giving the drinks, they took us all over the place. But somehow I didn't like everybody drank whiskey over there. Like you take the officer's mess and the American officer mess, whiskey was all over the place, you know. But I never did have whiskey, even at home. My father used to drink home brew, but I never used to drink any whiskey. I remember, and we used to buy little kegs of beer, you know. But I never drank beer. Well, whiskey's something I never cared for. Anyways, I never drank, you know, and smoke, mind you, smoke, this is something I didn't, and even in prison, I always managed to get part of a cigarette, and I would get so I would divide it, you know, and I'll have a couple of puffs, and my friend will have a couple of puffs, and we used to have about seven of us that used to do this, you know. Well, you get so that you get in a group, and you get to know that you can divide whatever anybody would get a smoke from the Jap. Then they would split it up and say, "Well, here, have a few puffs." And we got, and I smoked ever since. I've never quit. Never always say, "Well, you'll get cancer." I said, "Well, I'll tell you one thing: if I'm smoking all these years, I didn't get it. Now, if I get it, it won't make much difference." It's true. I wouldn't give up smoking. It doesn't matter what. I sooner give up having my beer as smoke.
Do you remember, you mentioned getting 150 packs of cigarettes for the ring. Did you have to, was that sort of a clandestine little deal? Like, did you have to sneak out and meet him at a certain place?
Oh, yes, 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 definitely, definitely. I used to get up, 12 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. And he'd say, "Well, I'm sentry today, and I'll be in your hut. Now, I want that. You bring ring, I bring cigarettes." See? Mm-hmm. And he would say, "Ichi, mei, men, one man." Mm-hmm. See? Okay, so I would meet him. Then my only problem is hiding them. Never mind, getting the cigarettes, it's a hiding them. But I used to have this, George Temple, I told you, he was a real friend of mine, and he was sick from the time I could remember while he was there, and even when they brought him back home, while he was in China, you see, he was always my friend there, and then the same way. George used to hold things for me there, but I had George's friend,
that he was the same way. He was sort of sickly looking, and they kept him in the hospital, and he died eventually. But he used to keep him in the with him while he was sick. He'd hide him in a blanket, and every so often I said to him, I said, whenever you feel like smoking, smoke. But I said, if I leave my cigarettes with you and I'm going out to work, I know they're safe. So I used to take 3 cigarettes with me when I went to work. And I used to break them off, roll them, and then maybe 4 or 5 of us would sit together and we'd talk of nothing but food. And this fellow's name, I'm going to tell you, his name was Johnny Bell. And he used to talk about food. He used to be a cook here. And he used to tell me such delicious food he used to make. Oh, roast, how he used to do it. I used to say, I'm going to kill you one of these days, I said. I said, the more you talk about it, I says, the worse the rest of us get, you know. Because all you talk about is food. Oh, I make this, and oh, I can make that. Geez, if I had some of that stuff, I could do that. And I said, all you're doing is making these guys sick. I said, can't you talk about something else? I said, talk about girls or talk about anything. I said, he said, what do you use to talk about girls? I said, I wouldn't know what to do with one if I had one. So that was it. No, some of us had a little bit of humor, and other ones had a lot of grudge.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have no grudge against the Japanese today any more than I lost a brother, sure. But then I found out that the army people, they were doped. Because you can't tell me that you would crawl over one another to get shot when you see something coming in a pontoon like they were trying to cross. And they were just, if you would have seen that water, it was just red. They're coming over this, because there's only certain ways to get in. There's only one outlet. See, and this outlet come in like a bottle. And they were coming in through this outlet, see. And there was 2 or 3guns stationed there, and they're just going back and forth. Them guns were so hot that you couldn't take the barrel off, that they would choke up. I remember the last one was the Kravchuk that had, was the last one that choked right up on him, and that was it. We couldn't even use a gun in there. And then they had about, I don't know how many brand guns they had, but there wasn't very many that they had there. That was something new too. But the Vickers guns, they were just like, you couldn't even cool them off with the water there. Yeah.
How about the Canadian government? Have you got any grudge against the Canadian government?
Yes, I have quite a bit of grudge against Mackenzie King.
Did you have to fight for your pension when you got back, or did you even get a pension when you got back?
I got 10%.
10%?
10%.
Even when your lungs were so bad?
Well, this is it. See, I didn't go like through the Waco. If I would have went to the NIMO, see, I would have got 50%. But by me not going there, and I wasn't well acquainted. See, this is an idea. You find these out, all these things out later on.
After it's too late.
Yeah. Now, later on too, when I had the Waco, they started my document in Vancouver. And coming over, they lost my document, see? And me, being telling them, I told them I had TB, but me too, I was dumb, because I didn't know what side it was on, see? But I could feel the pain more on my right side than I could on my left. Here, I had a dumb doctor over here, and I'm telling you, dumb. For 8 years, he always was taking it on the right-hand side. So they tell me later on, after 8 years, like, I was getting this treatment, remember, I told you, for TB. But I had the doctor, but after this doctor went away, the first doctor I had, it was an English doctor I had, he was giving me the treatment while I was there. But then I got another doctor, his name was Cox, C-O-X, I think it was. And he started it, and he says, there's nothing wrong with you. He says, I can't see a thing, he says, on the x-ray. Well, whoever took the x-rays couldn't have been very good. Because they always told me the same thing. So from then, okay, you got bronchitis instead. You haven't got it. So they went up to 20%. And for 20%, I've been getting it until just the last few years that Tully increased our pensions. I got all the documents at home, all the letters that were sent to me. And when they came up, that's when I got to 50%. Now, I don't hear in my left ear. This is why I have to sit with my right ear more, because what I hear with my left. Between you and I can talk and I can hear you. Let another two person come in there, and all it to me is like a jumble. I can't hear it. Like at work, if anybody talks to me, I don't hear them at all. It could be, there's enough noise, and then and somebody talks to me, I don't hear it unless he taps me in the back, and then he pulls me over to one side, and then I can hear him, but otherwise I don't hear. And then on top of that, they make you wear earplugs. So I was saying the other. So they raised it now to 67%. So, but I'm getting so that I think I'll need a hearing aid. If my right ear is starting to go.
What about? I forget what I was going to say.
You mean the?
Oh, your eyesight. I was going to ask you about your eyesight. I noticed you don't wear glasses.
I don't wear glasses. I got about four pair around here. If you look at them, I got bifocals. Now I got glasses. I use these when I'm watching anything or something like this. These are for watching and reading. Then I got a pair for close when I'm doing work. That's just strictly for work. About 24 inches away. Strictly for work, but then I wear those. I got about four pair of them around here. I don't have to pay for them, so he tells me to come every 2 years to get a pair of glasses.
Did you have trouble getting a job when you got home?
They got the job for me. They got it. When I come home, I told my dad they want me to stay in the army if I wanted to stay, but. I didn't think I could keep my wife on the money that they were paying, because they were paying us the same wages as what we were getting in the army.
Yeah.
So you couldn't keep up. I remember my rent was $29 a month at that time, and that was a four room apartment. Mm-hmm. You'd never get that again. Anyway, so it was $29. So I got out of the army. And I spent 4 weeks in the bed in Deer Lodge. So when I got out and started to get cured, see, and then I started to work in 46, and I asked him whether I could still work, and he said, "Well, I'll tell you something. If it's something where you can sit down and do the work, we'll get you a job." See? So he says, "We'll give you four places to go to, if you like." I think one was for the city, one was for the CPR, one was for CNR, and one was for the post office. Now I told him I had no education for the post office. I could work for the other three places because I figured I wouldn't need any education. So they give me a job. First of all, they wanted a painter, see? And they asked me what I could paint. I told them, yes, I did that before I went overseas. I used to paint houses for the landlords over here at 15 cents an hour. But anyways, they said, no, you have that scar on your lung, and it's not going to be good for you. No smells of any kind. He says, no paint of any kind. So he said, I says, well, they got one more job I can have at the CNR, and I says, cleaning windows. That's the job for you, the doctor says, cleaning windows. And he says, what do you do? I says, all you have to do is sit on the seat, I says, take a bonhomie and a rag, and you just clean the eight. You don't have to stand up. I says, all you do is just take it along on the seat and clean the window. He says, that's a job for you, he says. So I was on that job for almost a year and a half. It was easier on me. Mm-hmm. But I went down to 136 pounds. See the fat that they put on, it was just plain fat and just wore right out because by moving around. But also it did me more good. I think by moving around it did me more and more good all the time. Mm-hmm. And today I still do the same. I move around all the time. All the time. You want to see me go downstairs and upstairs during my weekends here. I'm never sitting down. Upstairs, downstairs, upstairs, downstairs. I'll listen to the records for a while downstairs, then upstairs I come talk to the wife. Then I'll ask her what she wants done. Then I'll go downstairs and do something for her there. Then I'll come up and do something over here. But I'm never hardly sitting down too long. This is the first time you see me sit so long when I'm talking to you. But I'm also a nervous type, if you'll notice, because you'll find more cigarette butts than anywhere else. I'm a steady smoker. I take Nerve pills. I take one a day. They want me to take two, but I find out that one is sufficient. I take one at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it does me. And I don't drink till I come home at night. And I asked my psychiatrist, and she said that's quite all right, providing you don't drink within 4 or 5 hours. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the pills will bother you. But after 4 or 5 hours, she says it's quite all right. And then she says, if you drink accordingly, you know. That doesn't say, she said, to get loaded to the eyebrows. So I said, I don't drink that much. I said, I just drink whenever I feel like drinking, I'll drink. Otherwise, I don't. I have a bottle of beer sometimes. It'll sit there for an hour and a half, 2 hours. It gets so warm that I even hate to drink it after that.
To sum it up, Was it worthwhile, or do you think the war was worthwhile?
The experience itself, I don't think I would exchange it for $1 million, the experience. But I also wouldn't, if you give me $1 million to do that all over again, I wouldn't do it neither. Now, you understand?
I think I got an inkling of what you mean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to have that experience is something I never knew, that a person could exist on so little. I never knew a body could stand up on so little. But that shows you what your body can stand to. Your body can take an awful lot of punishment. Mm-hmm. And a lot of few people know that. But you can starve for, you go to the bush and you can, if you know a little bit about it, you can eat almost anything. As long as your stomach can digest it, mm-hmm. you can survive. But I mean, especially if you're a bushman, then you find out that certain kind of roots you can eat and certain kind of berries you can eat, and you can survive, you see. But your body can go down to almost to about, I would say, 70 pounds, providing you're not a real big man. Mm-hmm. But you can survive because you got a certain amount of fat on your body that can hold you up. But that depends on what length of the time, you see. If you were there for a month, you'd probably die. Mm-hmm. Unless you had a certain amount of food to eat. But you could eat that rice and drink water. it'll probably keep you for 6 months. The same as this fellow, if you remember what the heck was named, the Hindu that drank goat's milk for 69 days?
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing, you see. He went on a feast. But then he did it so often, you see, that I guess he just wore himself out. But your body can survive an awful lot. You don't have, a person doesn't really have to worry about providing he's not sick. But there's only one thing, you must have a willpower to live. Once you lose that willpower, then you're gone. For instance, like you see a guy, he's sick, but he won't get out of that bed. That bed will do you more harm than it will do you good.
Mm-hmm.
If you're sick and you can go out and let that blood circulate in your system, you're 100% better than you laying down there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that bed will kill you. You don't need sleep. I go to bed at 12 o'clock and I get up at 5:45. Now, I don't feel half as tired.